Last case for argument, United States v. Roberson. Mr. Chang.
May it please the court, good morning. The one-month sentence on the bank robbery conviction was unreasonable. That is so because the district court sought to, and effectively did, eliminate the consecutive mandatory minimum called for by 924C.
Mr. Chang, I have a question for you about this. I would like, for the moment, we can come back to it if we need to put to one side all of the things the district court judge said about this. And I want to focus on the overall sentence, which is an 85-month sentence. Now, this court has a lot of case law in a number of contexts that say, you know, we look at the overall sentencing package, if you will. We had a lot of those cases when there were all the Bailey remands. We have cases in many different contexts where we say that district judges are allowed to take into account what the bottom line is going to look like. And in this case, it's quite possible, I don't rule out the thought that the bottom line of 85 months might be unreasonably low, but I don't know why, you know, if the district judge had thought the total sentencing package should be 93 months or 95 months or 100 months or, I mean, you see what I'm saying? I mean,
sure.
You're focusing on this 1 month as though it's in isolation, and I think that's in legal tension with our well-established practice of looking at the whole sentencing package.
I think in the run mill of cases, Judge Wood, you do look at the total sentencing package.
And sometimes part of that sentencing package is a consecutive sentence mandated. In fact, a lot of them are 924C mandatory consecutive sentences. So we can't distinguish this case on that basis alone.
Well, I think where the district court erred here was to take into account or actually disagree with the congressional judgment that these kinds of gun convictions are so dangerous that there ought to be a mandatory minimum sentence in addition to the punishment for the underlying crime.
I understand that she said that, but I'm suppose we reversed her and we sent it back and we said, come up with a reasonable sentence and I think if the government is arguing that the rule of law here is that each count needs to be considered for reasonableness separately, so that there needs to be a reasonable sentence on the bank robbery count, and then we have the mandatory consecutive 924C sentence, that would be, at least from my understanding of our circuit's law, quite a change to tell the district judges that they're no longer entitled to look at the full sentencing package. And if that's not the government's position, then I don't quite know why, you know, on remand, maybe 85 months or 90 months or 95 or something couldn't be justified as a reasonable sentence.
Well, I think two things. One is, it is our position that as a matter of law, the district court cannot take into account the 924C aspect.
And so sentencing packages are out.
Sentencing packages in most cases where there is not a congressional directive.
But they're always there. I mean, think of all these sentencing package cases. They're all 924C1 cases where there's a mandatory consecutive sentence as part of the package. I assure you. I mean, a great number of them are exactly this fact pattern. And maybe you want us to change all of them. You know, if you do, then we'll have to look at that. But you're asking us to do a bigger thing than perhaps you might have realized just by looking at Judge Gottschall's comments, which I don't think were, I mean, you know, it's unfortunate if a judge is saying, well, you know, people in Washington are doing this and I'm going to give you 1 month for that, and that's not helpful at all. And I can understand why you've taken the appeal, but still, you know, isn't the bottom line the reasonable sentence as a whole?
I think the bottom line is a reasonable sentence. But when you say as a whole, I think there is a difference. And perhaps I got too focused on what Judge Gottschall did and said, where it was clear here that the effect was to eliminate the 924C, the consecutive nature of the 924C. So I haven't gone back and looked at those cases that you're talking about where there's a 924C component in a complete package.
I think that reasonableness includes deference to a congressional judgment. You know, if they want a consecutive sentence, judge can't nullify it by giving no sentence on the underlying crime.
I think that's right, Judge. And you know, even if, I'm sure you're right, Judge, that if the some of the sentencing packaging cases included 924C cases. So as a matter of law, it may not be a forbidden factor, although that I think that is...
I understand why you concede. I just don't understand.
I don't judge. I do not concede. It is our position that as a matter of law, it's a forbidden factor.
Well, I will bail you out to this degree. Prior to Booker, these sentencing package cases constrained the discretion of the district court judge much more on the underlying offense. And so it would have been regarded as a downward departure all the way down to 1 month, which we almost certainly would have reversed as maybe there would have been some fantastic justification for it, but usually you couldn't depart downward that much. And so in the pre-Booker world, the package as a whole was under much tighter constraints than it is in the post-Booker world.
Right, and that's why it's all our alternative position, not our primary position, but our alternative position that even if somehow the district court is entitled to look and disagree with congressional policy, which we say the court is not, but if they were, the court can only do that with great restraint and in only extraordinary circumstances, because Congress has the primary role in setting the sentencing factors, so long as they're consistent with the Sixth Amendment. And I think here, if you look at the justification that the judge offered here, there were not compelling circumstances that justified this kind of extraordinary justification, so deviation. If you take the 924C component out of it, and you look at this 46-month sentence going down to 1 month, the reasons offered by the district court are insufficient. And we recognize
that students should be allowed to commit armed bank robberies?
They certainly shouldn't, Judge. What the district court relied on, and that's a good example of the sentencing chips that the judge was putting into its analysis. The court focused on these prospects for rehabilitation that are simply not extraordinary or compelling. And I understand that deference to district judge, there's great deference to district judges in our post-Booker world. But light appellate review does not mean no appellate review. And I think a review of the district judge's rationale here, even giving it deference, don't support this kind of a deviation. For example, the judge did not mention the fact that the defendant made off with his share of the proceeds, $50,000 from the bank robbery, and refused to tell law enforcement where that money was. And that's hard evidence that there is not a great prospect for rehabilitation, or at least even if there's some prospect for rehabilitation, it does not justify deviation of nearly 100%. In addition, you just look at the defendant's criminal history as well, where the defendant had an aggravated unlawful use of a weapon conviction. He was on probation for that when he committed this offense. And again, hard evidence that the prospects of rehabilitation do not justify a deviation of the extent that the district court issued here. If I may, I'd like to save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Ms. Lockett?
Your Honors, Counsel, my name is Angela Lockett, and myself and the Law Office of Standing She Willis represent the appellee in this case, Gary Roberson. Of course, we start by saying that we think the 85-month sentence was reasonable in this case.
But how can the district judge basically just flatly say she disagrees with a statute that Congress has passed and that she's going to do? She pretty much says, I'm going to do everything I can to nullify it. Now, isn't that a little over the top?
Your Honor, I would disagree with that is what the district judge disagreed with. What she disagreed with was the prosecutor's charging decision, never with...
But that's none of her business.
We don't review exercise of prosecutorial discretion as long as the prosecutor's choice of offenses to charge and so on is consistent with the law.
We really have no power to do that. That's a separation of powers concern of the first order.
And I agree. And what the district judge did in this case was she started off with what the guideline range would be under how the defendant was charged.
She had to start with the guideline range with how he was charged.
And that's what she did start with the 130 months. She took a position that amount of time was unreasonable and did not satisfy her sentencing goals, which is to enter a sentence that is sufficient but not more than necessary for the sentencing goals.
But in doing that calculation, she was obliged by 924C1 to incorporate the congressional judgment that there is a mandatory consecutive term. It's really not up to the judge to say, I wish Congress had never passed 924C.
And she's never said that, and she didn't do that. In fact, she did exactly what 924C dictates her to do, which is to impose a mandatory 84 months. 924C simply says it must be imposed in addition to any other sentence. Nothing in 924C dictates what that next sentence must be.
1 month for this armed bank robbery is an unreasonable sentence.
The defendant was sentenced to 85 months total. It's not 1 month for an armed robbery. It's an 85-month total sentence. And the 85-month sentence is still more than 21 months more than a co-defendant in this case received.
Counsel, suppose the defendant were indicted for both a drug offense and the bank robbery instead of the gun offense and the bank robbery. And the district judge had said, I disagree with the 100-to-1 ratio for cocaine. So what I'm going to do, the Court of Appeals has told me I must nonetheless follow that ratio. So I'm going to oppose the sentence for the drug offense and then give the defendant 1 month for bank robbery because that's the best way available to me to nullify the 100-to-1 ratio between crack and powder cocaine. Would that be a proper thing for a judge to do?
Well, that wouldn't be improper because in that case, the judge is trying to nullify the 100-to-1 ratio, which she
exactly
isn't allowed to do.
That's what the district judge said she was trying to do.
In this case, what she was trying to do was impose a sentence that she thought was reasonable.
In my hypothetical, the judge would say, that's the sentence I think is reasonable because I don't agree with this conversion ratio between crack and powder. So my total package is reasonable by my lights, though not by Congress's lights. The question I'm asking is whether the judge can say, in determining whether the sentence is reasonable, I can disagree with the statute and sentence by my lights rather than by Congress's lights.
No, the judge cannot do that. But in your hypothetical, what the judge could do is say, this is what the sentencing guidelines say I should sentence for crack cocaine, this is what it is on a robbery. However, I find that total sentence is not warranted in this case. And following my dictates of 355.3, when I analyze it along with the other factors, I find that another sentence would be reasonable, and that would be allowed. But of course, the judge is not allowed to change congressional dictates of whatever it is that the 101 disparity. That would be an improper factor. That's not listed in the factors of 355.3A. 1 through 6 or 1 through 7, and that's what she did. She looked at three, and that's where this, in terms of the appellate review, first the district court should look at.
I find that also unreasonable too. This is very serious criminal behavior. Comes on top of other violent criminal activity by him, and. I don't see the mitigating factors at all.
Your Honor, this judge is
mitigating factors.
Your Honor, the mitigating factors and reason of the district court is that she looked at the defendant. She started off with school and what he was like when he was growing up, his family environment, how he started getting trouble only relatively recently, his youth.
What does that bear on, that he only got in trouble? What kind of psychological or sociological facts does the recency of his criminality bear on? I understand that. Look, we're getting back to the old days where judges just pull sentences out of their hats.
That's not what
with no systematic analysis of
That's illogical principles.
That's not what she did in this case, though.
She did get the idea that if you start committing violent crimes when you're a teenager rather than an infant or something like that, that means you're a better candidate for rehabilitation.
Your Honor,
where'd she get that idea from?
In all due respect, it was her idea.
Answer my question. Where did she get that idea from?
Her wisdom and judgment.
What do you mean, wisdom and judgment? Did she say she has a history of dealing with criminals like that, or that she's read studies by sociologists or psychologists?
No, she didn't, but I don't think that it's this court's province to institute your judgment for her judgment in terms of
what it is our
judgment. Ask for some basis for the exercise of judgment, not just, you know, wild speculation.
Well, Your Honor, in all due respect, it wasn't wild speculation. She outlined very clearly, not only writtenly, but orally, her reasons for choosing a sentence within an 85-month range.
Yeah, what she failed to do, though, when you start with this guideline range of 130 to 141 months, which is what you get with a proper calculation on the bank robbery and then the 84 consecutive, she needs to explain how paring it down to 1 month instead of 46 to 57 on the bank robbery is a reasonable way of approaching this, because, I mean, frankly, that's not even that much for a bank robbery of this magnitude. I guess it was his first one.
Your Honor, what she did was she looked at what the total sentence would be.
That's the problem, in a sense, because it's a question of explaining why she's deviating that much from what the guideline sentence would be. And frankly, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said she really just disagreed with the charging decision. But the problem is that's not a permissible route for her to take.
Your Honor, in all due respect, when it comes to sentencing, she must impose a sentence that is sufficient enough but not more than necessary. That is her dictate. She was required to look at
the average sentence for bank robbery by note.
Your Honor, I don't know, but I do know
suppose the average sentence for bank robbery by note is 7 years. Wouldn't that be relevant to the adequacy of this 87-month sentence?
Your Honor, not only would that be relevant, but what's also relevant...
You agree it would be relevant. So why don't we have some information? Why doesn't the judge say, if she's going to give this life sentence, say, well, you know, this is more serious than robbery by note, but robbery by note, those people only get 3 months in prison, right? She could say something like that. My guess is the robbers by notes get, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Your Honor, in this case, in terms
robbers
of...
Robbers by notes go in. They give them a note. They get a little pack of money, which explodes after a few minutes, covering them with green ink, and then they're arrested. Now, those people get heavy sentences. Your client is on a higher plane of criminality.
And he is, and he had three co-defendants, and one of his co-defendants got 63 months. Is he any less culpable? It's all dealt on how the government chose to charge.
You're going to look at a co-defendant, which is fine. But how about looking about other people who commit similar crimes?
Right,
in order to maintain some, you can look at the good students who commit other similar crime.
Your Honor,
some judges would think it was an aggravating factor for an intelligent person to engage in criminality because intelligent people are more dangerous.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying, but in terms of the disparity is created by in terms of how the government chooses to charge a particular individual defendant. And it's her prerogative to decide what a reasonable sentence would be based on the factors of 355-3A, which is what she did. It's this court's decision not to impose your wisdom of what could have been a sentence, but to look at the actual sentence imposed and decide if that is reasonable. The actual sentence imposed was based upon an actual guideline for robbing a bank of $133,000 while brandishing a firearm. The guidelines say that for a defendant with our defendant's history, the guidelines say that a proper sentence for that crime is between 79 and 97 months if it had not been charged with a 924C violation.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Locke.
Thank you.
Mr. Chang?
Unless there are any other questions.
One question is whether we should wait for Claiborne.
Right, Judge. Here's my thought on that, Judge. Let me make two. The answer is no, but I'll make two acknowledgments, and I'll tell you why the answer is no. I acknowledge that this defendant isn't going anywhere, so it's not a matter of the appeal being mooted out by any means. So I acknowledge that, and I also acknowledge that we do have a sense of what the Supreme Court is going to be addressing in that case, because they crafted the questions presented themselves. So we know what they're interested in. But I think it's risky and tricky business to try to predict what the Supreme Court is going to address in the course of addressing the specific questions presented. And neither Claiborne nor Rita involve this issue of a 924C or specific congressional judgment. Claiborne had it was a crack cocaine case, but...
No, the reason I ask about Claiborne is because the Eighth Circuit in that case articulated as its rule that going well below the guideline range requires some extraordinary justification. And the Supreme Court may say something bearing on that would bear on this too.
Right, Judge.
Certainly it technically doesn't involve the question whether the district court can evade mandatory minimum sentences.
Right. I think it's consistent with this case law, if the Supreme Court were to hold, as we hope it does, that an extraordinary deviation requires an extraordinary justification. That's consistent, I think, with this circuit's case law. So
you're not actually arguing that, are you?
No.
You're not arguing that we have to find an extraordinary justification to uphold the sentence.
I'm not, Judge, but I think we win on the separate 924C issue, which I think is another reason that we don't have to wait. And I also would like, to say that I'd also hate for not just this case, but the run mill of sentencing appeals for us to have to wait.
There is probably quite a queue.
Okay. As we saw before, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chang and Ms. Lockett. And court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.